Welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. We're on episode 50-something. We're excited to be here. It's football season. It's fall officially coming up soon. And so we're all in good moods, I think.
Is it officially fall today?
No. It's a question for you later. But
you
we can go to it now.
Fall officially coming up soon.
Yeah. So I was going to ask it. I was going to ask it later, but do you know when the autumnal equinox is?
Do I know? I do not. No.
It is Saturday, the 23rd.
Is it the 23rd? Okay.
Do you know why it's the official start of fall? Do you know why they narrow it as that?
Is that whenever the Chevrolet Equinox came out or something?
Yes.
So the equinox in the spring and the fall is when the days and nights are approximately the same length worldwide.
Okay.
So like that's when it balances, kind of switches over. So after the 23rd, it'll be more night than it will be day. In the northern hemisphere, at least. So southern hemisphere is starting their spring.
Let's go there.
Yeah, there you go.
I cannot stand whenever it gets dark so soon.
I know. I was walking out. So it's Thursday while we record. I think everybody knows that by now. So I was walking out after last night, and it was like it was only like 8:15, 8:10.
Yeah, it was pitch dark.
Pitch black outside, yeah. And it's like, oh, man.
Yeah, like.
When did that happen?
But you guys are not putting kids to bed, and that's a huge help for me.
That's got to be helpful, but. On a Wednesday night,
yeah, and I remember those.
Whenever
days.
We like mm-hmm. the time changes, even mm-hmm. and it gets dark really early, uh-huh. like teenagers are going to be showing up to youth group in the dark.
In the dark, I remember that.
It's the worst.
Yeah,
I want some daylight.
It is agreed.
So you're down daylight. On that, but I think life in general, you're probably I don't know above average. I don't know. How are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 10, why?
Life is pretty above average right now. Yeah.
How are you guys feeling? Scale of 1 to 10, and then defend your answer. Why?
Oh, defend it.
Yeah. It's all about today. Defend your answer.
6.5, because it can always get better.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't go above an 8. So I'll land somewhere around a 7, because that's still like a passing grade, you know, 70.
Yeah.
It's a C.
Why are you feeling good today?
Things are good. I don't know. I have no idea why I'm feeling good today. I do know that I'm not a like 8, 9, or 10 because I'm lagging a little bit. This week has been a little bit of a slower week for me. No, not as much spring in my step as usual, all that sort of stuff. So
it's autumn.
Go to an 8 or 9 or 10, but
because it's getting dark at 3:30 in the afternoon.
I know
because it's autumn, yeah. So you have fall in your step.
Ah, nice. Yeah, but I don't know. I feel good. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah,
drinking coffee. Nothing wrong with that.
I'd say about the same thing, 7 or so. We have, I don't know, the schedule seems like it's picking up a little bit with a few events for, you know, church and school and things like that. So fall calendar, just trying to manage that well as a family, balance that. Hey, I accidentally sent you guys the answers to a few questions.
Great. I was wondering about that.
So I got new questions.
Oh, all right.
What do you think, there's more of in the world, ants or fish?
Ants.
I don't know.
It seems like it should be ants,
should
so it's
be
probably going to be fish. But
I mean, ants is what I thought first.
Far and away, it's ants.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's more mass of ants than there are humans, actually, too.
So. Yeah. That's terrifying.
More trees on Earth or more stars in the Milky Way?
I'm going to say trees on Earth.
Nah, it's going to be stars in the Milky Way.
Trees on Earth, actually.
Ah, there
really?
We go.
They estimate 3 trillion. Look at that.
All right.
3 trillion trees?
Oh, and we're complaining about one
piece
let's
of paper?
Not, I mean, come on. Print.
Start
printing,
losing.
Guys. Start
still
printing.
Losing trees, so yeah. Anyway. We could...
This is one of my favorite quotes. Sorry, you were asking how the week was going.
Yeah, yeah.
And so everybody knows Kansas City Royals are terrible at baseball.
Yep.
So it was like 2006, I think, that like... I can't remember how many games they lost. It's probably just about as many as they're losing this year. And they asked Buddy Bell at the time... You know, who is the manager? They're like, man, do you just think this is as bad as it can get? And this is a quote to live your life by. And this is what he said: never say it can't get worse. And so,
that's optimistic.
So that year, did it get worse?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it got bad. It was really, really, really bad. So anyway, I have that photo saved to remind me. So just quotes to live by.
You just reorganized your office, so is that one framed up?
Oh no, but that could go on the wall.
Nice.
That would be
that'd
great.
Be good.
Yeah,
that'd be
yeah,
great. That'd be a good one.
Yeah. All right. For your edification as well, all you listeners out there, there are also more stars in the universe than grains of salt in a cup. I think you probably knew that. our universe is just really big. So just a few random, you know, trivia questions out there. And then I forgot I had one more, but anyway, I think we probably have enough randomness before we get into it today.
So you sent out this big old text about
it was twice as long as it should have been.
Galaxy and astronomers. My question for you is, like, what got you on that? Like, are you just like randomly looking for stuff for the podcast, or are you like actually kind of digging into astronomy a little bit?
Randomly looking into it, but actually what got me going was the first question I forgot to ask. Do you think there's more doors or wheels in the world?
More
doors or wheels?
Doors or wheels.
Doors or wheels.
It's got to be wheels, right?
Well, I would say if you count a car, it's, you know, four wheels or 18 wheels, but you have doors.
On a car, then you have like at least four doors.
Right. Oh, no, you could have two.
Or a trunk is five, or you could have two.
You could have.
But a motorcycle has two wheels and no doors.
Yeah.
But your kitchen cabinets are all doors and no wheels.
So what's the
doors have wheels?
So what's the answer?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
You don't know the answer to this. Okay.
I think it's a debate that people go on and on and on and on and on about.
It's got to be doors.
Do you think there are more doors or wheels in the world?
It's got to be doors.
I think it's wheels.
Think about all of these cities with
Hot Wheels are cars with no doors but have wheels.
But yeah, that's true. But think about all of these like huge, massive cities with skyscrapers. Like one skyscraper building probably has thousands upon thousands of doors. And we've got lots and lots and lots of doors.
But what's on the inside of every one of those doors?
Not a car with wheels.
But are there drawers that cast on wheels?
Oh, my goodness.
The drawers pull out with wheels on them.
This is overwhelming. I'm at a five now. I can't.
All right. So let's get into
it. Have you ever thought about, this is one of the overwhelming things. Have you ever thought about, I don't know why I'm obsessed with this, but have you ever thought about which gas pump you have used the most in your lifetime?
Never.
I've thought about this.
Never thought
so
about
like,
it.
So, like, of all of the times that I filled up my car, is there not necessarily a gas station, a specific gas pump at a gas station that you have used more than any other gas pump?
Never thought about that for a second. And I won't after this either.
What about the checkout line at the grocery store?
Are we getting that? There's some.
No, we're fine.
Yeah?
We're fine.
All right.
To our listeners, there's some, I don't know, maybe we're building a new building out in the hallway now. That's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah. Cool. All right, so let's get into it, because this was part four this week of Faith Under Fire. We're working our way through 1 Peter and asking the question, how can the trials of life, the persecution, the hardships actually fuel our faith instead of extinguish our hope? And so it's been a good 3 weeks so far. This is the fourth week then. So Adam, would you recap the subject for Sunday and kind of where you went?
Yeah, so I think for most of us in as Christians, as people of faith, especially those of us who have a little bit more gray hair, we've noticed that there is a pretty big shift that's taking place in the mm-hmm. culture. In fact, Luke, what year were you born? You were 95?
96.
You're the Olympics.
Yeah, you're the Olympics. So for those who like remember life before, and like I was a teenager before 1994, and Josh, you were.
I was a teenager in the late 90s.
Yeah. But you can see, and so like my parents, my grandparents, if my grandparents were still on this earth, but people my grandparents' age have just noticed there's been like a huge shift in our culture and how people respond to Christianity. And so it's becoming an increasingly negative view, not trying to be alarmist or woe is us or any of those kind of things. Yeah. But I think I don't think that's that big of a statement or outlandish of a statement to make. And so the question is, in a world that is becoming increasingly negative towards faith, how do we, what's our response? How do we continue to move forward? And so 1 Peter 3 actually fits really, really well. And Josh, I mean, I think in week one, you did a great job of just pointing out how for Christians in persecuted countries, 1 Peter is kind of like their manual.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for us in America, and it's probably going to become a more familiar book because it really does help us just be able to walk through these things. And so we talked about that, how we are to be making sure we're walking the walk, how we've got an anchored hope and that we've got an answer for why we live the way that we live, no matter what it is that we face.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Luke, as you read through stuff, what stuck out, big takeaway, anything surprising, helpful?
Yeah, I think for me, just as I'm kind of thinking through it and in regards to what was encouraging and a little bit challenging for me as I'm reading through the outline, was just this little stuff about like walking the walk, right? Like as Christians in America, you like kind of start to feel and notice that shift. And there's a huge temptation to do the "woe is us" type of thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, if it's as bad as it is now, could you imagine what it would have been like at Noah's day? Or just different like negative
right.
phrases like that. And it's tempting to kind of it almost lose hope for the church because of the way that culture is shifting. But the reality is, regardless of how culture is, a Christian who walks the walk should be filled with hope. And I would even, you know, suggest that whenever it's more negative to be a Christian, even more the reason to be filled with hope. And so I've got to start asking my question, am I living the life in regards to my intimacy with Jesus and my rhythms with his community and all that sort of stuff? Am I living in such a way that actually inspires and produces the hope that's going to carry me through this? And so I just thought that was really, really helpful to think through. I don't want to have the negative woe is me with the culture shifting. I want to have regardless of what this looks like, I am filled with hope for the glory of God's kingdom. So it was encouraging to think about.
Yeah, so I just read this morning Psalm 73, and it's a psalm of Asaph, and he's writing, and just basically the first half of it, he's looking around like, why are evildoers succeeding? And why do they get what they want? And why, God, aren't you doing this? And why? And then he says, then I went to your sanctuary, O God, and I finally understood the destiny of the wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, truly, they are on a slippery path, sending them over a cliff to destruction. They're going to be destroyed. And then later he says, even if my health may fail, my spirit may grow weak, God remains the strength of my heart. He is mine forever. How good it is to be near God. I've made the sovereign Lord my shelter. And so
I love that.
There's a pattern in many of the Psalms where it's like, what in the world is going on?
Yeah.
Everyone's against me, but
yeah.
God.
Well, and the cool thing, and just in regard to rhythms and walking the walk, is where did he come to that realization?
He went to the sanctuary.
Yeah. He was walking the walk.
Yeah. I had that realization this morning too, just reading, going, hey, this is how we kind of fix some of this. We fix our eyes on what's true in the midst of all that.
Yeah.
So. Well, and one of the things too, I was thinking about, Luke, while you were just talking about, you know, the woe is me kind of thing, I was reminded of Hebrews 12,
mm-hmm.
to where it's, you know, consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you won't grow weary and lose heart. Mm-hmm. But then the writer says, whoever the writer is, who do you think it is? Who is it?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
What do you think, Josh?
Priscilla.
Priscilla? I knew that's you were going to make your wife happy
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
Or Aquila, or Luke, or Paul.
Yeah, or Paul. Paulos. But in verse 4, it says, in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very easy for us to go, woe is me, woe is me. But I think Hebrews 12:4 is a good instruction there of like, yeah, things might be getting hard, but none of us have died for this yet.
Mm-hmm.
And none of us have, you know, there's not like open, like physical persecution at this point. And so it's not a woe is me. It's just a be aware of the world that we're in so that we can be prepared to give an answer so that we don't win arguments. We win disciples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
yeah.
what it comes down to.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so one of the most helpful, or I guess intriguing, I don't know, like when I was reading your introduction about the game of life, like I was hooked.
Yeah.
Before you even got to the quote-unquote hook part, you know, yeah. like I was hooked, like this is wild.
Isn't it crazy?
Like, so let's just remind people a few of the highlights, not necessarily the whole thing, but just a few of the highlights of how the game of life evolved.
Yeah, so it starts off in 1798, which blew my mind.
Yeah.
And it was about
22 years after the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was about let me see, virtues get you through the game while vices...
63 years before Corinth.
So. Yeah, 63 years.
Yeah, sorry.
So virtue gets you through the game while vice slow you down. Uh-huh. Then in 1860, there's still some good things and virtues and those things. It's about morality. In fact, here's the quote. Milton Bradley described it as a, quote, highly moral game that encourages children to lead exemplary lives and entertains both old and young with the spirit of friendly competition. Well, then in 1960, it comes out again, and...
So that's 100 years later?
So 100 years later. Okay. Now the winner of the game is the one who, at life's day of reckoning, makes the most money.
Okay.
And retires to millionaire acres.
Uh-huh.
Then in the 90s, it comes out again, and there are some things like good deeds, but the reward for those is cash.
Mm-hmm. This would have been the version that my brothers and I played.
Yeah.
1990s. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And then in 2011, it came back out again. And the description on the website goes, do whatever it takes to retire in style with the most wealth at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this massive shift that has just taken place in how we view, quote, the game of life.
Yeah. And what got me was, didn't you say something like it was the same... scuba diving was the same as donating a kidney in the most recent version.
Yeah.
You get as many points.
Yeah, you get as many points for scuba diving as you do donating a kidney.
Yeah, and so this is just one board game, but it goes to show just how influenced we can be from culture. And I mean, mm-hmm. nowadays, I don't know that I've ever actually watched a TikTok.
Really?
No.
No, I'm a grown-up, so I watch my TikTok on Instagram.
On Instagram,
yeah. Yeah.
So.
You know what? I think I have that way. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I do know there is just discipleship by TikTok or mm-hmm. people going to find their answers there. And, you know, maybe you find some good stuff, but maybe you don't.
Right.
And it's just cultural. It's just something to watch out for is what we're saying is just how influenced we can be. And I think, you know, some of my comments to you, Adam, yesterday were, I think, you know, how you opened earlier, you said those of us with gray hair, or at least who have seen the 80s or 90s or 70s or 50s or 60s and seen this transformation, some people haven't. So some people at Corinth yesterday listening to this have only experienced the, I guess, the third world of Christianity.
Or the neutral.
The neutral or the...
Yeah.
It's like, I would kind of say that, you know, I grew up in the neutral, if you want to use these, you know, terminology and points. I grew up in the neutral, but I wouldn't necessarily say Mike's like, you know, as a 10, 11, 12, 13 year old kid, I'm not really paying attention.
Correct.
Right. And so I may have grown up in the neutral and maybe been formed by that a little bit. But what I primarily have spent most of my life wrestling with as a young adult and as a youth minister to teenagers is this third one.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to me. I have no idea what the first one would have looked like, other than what I've been able to read and imagine stories from.
Yeah, so let's remind everybody the three worlds of Christianity. The first one was before 94, is that right?
Yeah, it's the positive. So the positive world is America prior to 1994, and Christianity is seen as a positive force in the culture. Mm-hmm. Then there's the neutral world, 1994 to 2014. Where secularism had taken enough hold for Christianity to lose its place of privilege, but it wasn't really disfavored. And then the final stage is the negative world, and that's where it really kicks off pretty much at the time when same-sex marriage comes into play, and it's, you know, a lot of these things are going
Which
on.
Which is partly what we get to when we say, like, our grandparents would never have even imagined.
Correct.
The phrase "I'm a man trapped in a woman's body."
Yes.
Some of the more current cultural narratives.
Yeah. Yes.
They couldn't even have had the context to ask that question.
No. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the oldest one at the table here. I'm 44. I remember 1992. Okay. So I was in seventh grade, and the election was going on, and it was H.W.
and Clinton
Bush against Bill Clinton. Uh-huh. And to me, I remember now. I wasn't obviously engaged politically, but I remember overhearing the conversations of adults in my life.
I got to vote for that one at Kelsey Norman Elementary or Irving Elementary School.
1992? You didn't get to vote for that.
Not like for real.
No.
We did well, like a, I was 7 years old. Okay. So I was first grade. Okay. We got to vote. We were learning our.
These days they probably would have counted it.
They probably would have counted it. Yeah. But I remember adults in my world. I remember I grew up in the Midwest, mm-hmm. Bible Belt, Buckle of the Bible Belt, all those things.
Yep.
And just talking about how can we be putting a person with the nickname Slick Willie into office, and a big part of the scandal of Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. even before the Monica Lewinsky stuff, mm-hmm. were his affairs and, you know, people coming out, you know, saying, you know, that he had inappropriate relationships with these women. And so I remember, as I look back at it now, it's like I can see that shift starting to take place to where mm-hmm. the neutral world is starting to move its way in there. Mm-hmm. Because people were like, well, it's not really too big of a deal.
Yeah.
That this is going on.
I blame MTV.
Well,
when did that come out? Late 80s?
86, 85, something like that. Yeah.
And the first 80, one was Video Killed the Radio Star. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting to be able to just kind of watch those shifts take place. Like I saw something the other day. Well, it was probably just a couple of weeks ago with the anniversary of 9/11. Mm-hmm. So that's 2001. So we're still in that neutral world. But do you know who the White House invited to address the nation?
It's a pastor.
Yes.
It was a
very famous pastor.
Yeah. Billy Graham?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so Billy Graham is addressing the nation on 9/11. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that in 2023, is that your word?
Yeah.
If a tragedy on that scale took place again, I don't think Rick Warren's going to be brought in by the White House to address the nation. I'm just going out on a limb there.
No.
So that I think that just kind of helps to mark that shift that's taken place in the culture.
Yeah, and I made a comment too. We've talked about this in our circles here at the church, is that we kind of see this shift play out even generationally. Mm-hmm. as you kind of look at people's stories, you got grandparents who never missed a Sunday at church and grew up mm-hmm. in the pews all the time, who raised kids in the neutral world that kind of maybe grew up in the church, but then church became less and less of a priority. So they became de-churched, and now they're raising kids in the negative world that, you know, are actually unchurched. And so you've got this kind of even generational thing over these last three generations of churched, de-churched, and unchurched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can, this, I hadn't even thought of this until now, but even things culturally, like businesses being open on a Sunday.
Yep.
I mean, what are they? Blue laws? Is what they are?
Yes.
Blue,
yeah, that was no liquor on Sunday. Mm-hmm.
But even, you know, not just the liquor, but other stores being open in general. Like, there's just a cultural shift of mm-hmm. now business is done 7 days a week, you know.
People marvel at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting, you know, that they're seen as weird. And yet they're most successful, which is phenomenal. So, hey, I was listening to something this week about First Peter, and the podcast hosts just made this point that the letter opens, and Peter calls them elect exiles. But who he's writing to, they're actually not exiles. They're actually at home. Like these are, most of them are not Jewish people. They're Gentiles who are from, you know, Asia Minor. Mm-hmm. But yet he calls them exiles, and the reason is because of their faith. And so when we mm-hmm. have our faith in Christ, we're always going to feel out of place.
Yeah, we're going
if
against
we're really living our faith. We're going to live out of place every day. We're going to feel some tension.
Yeah, we're really kind of going against the grain of where culture is going. And so it naturally feels that way.
Well, and I would even throw this in there too. In this negative world that we now live in, if you don't feel like an exile,
that was my question, yeah.
Then it's probably time for a little bit of an inventory check mm-hmm. there of why do I feel...
Why do I feel at home here?
So at home here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
I have nothing more to say there.
I don't know that there's warning. Anything more yeah. that yeah. needs to be said yeah. there, but why would you feel at home in this yeah. place? The old hymn, you know, this world is not my home, I'm just a passing through kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In the new negative world that we're in, those words should make a whole lot more sense to us than they did, you know, 35 years ago.
Yeah. And, another hymn, what was the one I wrote at the end?
Because there? He Lives.
Because He Lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know the kind of the birth narrative of that song, how it came up, came about. Mm-hmm. Didn't know it was the Gaithers.
You didn't know it was Bill Gaither?
No, but hey. It is. And it was written in the 60s.
Knew that.
And it was written when I think they said their third child was being born.
Yeah. I did not know this part of it.
Yeah. And so their third child was being born. It's the 60s, the sexual revolution. There's drug, culture everywhere and stuff too. And so they were freaking out in the 1960s going, how are we going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And yet they wrote, Because He Lives, I Can Face Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that was just a cool story to come across. So before we go any further, Luke, do you have Luke, 1 Peter 3, 13 to 18 pulled up? If we can just, we've done this several times through this series. Just let's remind ourselves of the text that we're exploring, that we're diving into. Can you read it from start to finish?
Yeah. Yeah, and I've got Adam's sermon doc pulled up, so he did it in spurts, so I'm going to scroll down at each one, and we'll do it that.
Just call it a Selah. Like yeah, Selah.
All right, this is the text. Now, who will want to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you suffer for doing what is right, God will reward you for it. So don't worry or be afraid of their threats. Instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And if someone asks about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it. But do this in a gentle and respectful way. Keep your conscience clear. Then if people speak against you, they will be ashamed when they see what a good life you live because you belong to Christ. Remember, it is better to suffer for doing good, if that is what God wants, than to suffer for doing wrong. And then verse 18, Christ suffered for our sins once for all time. He never sinned, but he died for sinners to bring you safely home to God. He suffered physical death, but he was raised to life in the Spirit.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This text is obviously what kind of spurred our conversation. We're talking about the three worlds. Why is it important to see the kind of world we're living in? How do we notice it well? And then here's the question. How can we find the middle ground of not being caught unaware of the culture we're in, but also not freak out?
I think it's you just have to recognize the reality. And so you take the blinders off. And so once again, let's talk generationally. For those of us who grew up and experienced the positive culture, there has to be just a point to where we just say, that's not where we are anymore. We shouldn't expect favor. We shouldn't expect whatever it is. Because the days of, so like, just going back into that positive culture, I mean, because the church was such a, or because Christianity was such a well thought of and accepted part of the culture, people would just go to church because that's where people went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now here we are, and it's different to where people go to church because they're looking for something. And so for me, I can see a positive.
Yeah.
To the shift.
Absolutely.
People aren't just coming to church. I'm not saying this happened a lot, but because they think it's going to help them win an election. They think it's going to get them business contacts. Mm-hmm. They think that it's just the socially acceptable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just need to be there so that people think I'm a good, upstanding person.
Right.
Now people are here because they're hungry for something.
Yep.
So that's a positive. So we just got to acknowledge the reality of the situation and then be able to see, hey, okay, because that's the case, God's always got incredible ability to do more than we could ever dare to dream or imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But we are ripe for a revival moment.
Yeah.
And revival doesn't happen in a tent; it happens in our hearts. And there's change that can take place because of this. So I think the first step of it is just like any other thing. You have to acknowledge the reality of the situation. And then that helps you be more prepared for what is happening and what will happen in the days, months, years to come.
Cool. Any other thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, when you asked that question, like, how do we find that middle ground and not freak out, but find hope and all that sort of stuff, the first thing that I thought of, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing to think of, but is that you got to be in the world, but not of it. And mm-hmm. we often...
I think I've read...
Yeah. we've often used that to talk about, like, I don't know. I've heard a lot of people, like, justify towing the line of, like, doing questionable things because of that. But when I hear that, like, what I'm thinking is, I've got to be aware of the world around mm-hmm. me. I've got to know what's going on, but I've not got to let my knowledge of what's going on influence my character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that my suffering can produce character, and character hope, and hope perseverance, right? Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of the first thing that I'm like, okay, I in the world means I need to know what's going on. But not of the world means I'm not going to let what's going on influence me as a person. Rather, I'm going to let Christ's truth and the and God's word disciple me in who I am.
Yeah, and in some senses, you almost have to view yourself as a cross-cultural missionary learning the language.
Sure. Yep.
So you can communicate the gospel just like you would learn another, maybe a foreign language. Often cultural values can mm-hmm. seem like a foreign language. And instead of, remember, like you said earlier, Adam, we're trying to win a disciple. We're mm-hmm. not trying to win an argument. So rather than trying to shame or blast people, we're really trying to understand why certain values are important to people. Mm-hmm. And then exposing in a kind and gentle way what the text says, how Jesus really is what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And that as well, like, it leads me to ask this question too. Like, if the shift that we're seeing we think is actually positioning the church for some real for some real growth and some real disciples, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the church here is not trying to win arguments, but we're trying to win disciples. The question I'm asking is, when you think about these different worlds, it's in some contexts we have to ask, do we even want it to go back to the positive world? Mm-hmm. And you know, you think about churches and all around the world. Like, generally speaking, throughout history, since the church, it is the church sees growth and revival in mm-hmm. places where it's really not cool to be a person of faith. Mm-hmm. And so we're making this shift, and all of a sudden we're seeing, you know, people coming to church looking for something, and we feel like there's some revival that could potentially be happening. And I think that's all coming from, you know, this position of the world, you know, it being more of a negative thing in our context to be, to be a faith person.
I think the answer is yes on both of those. Is yes, it would be great to have a culture that was holding to Christian values and valuing life and those, and we should work, and the way that's going to come about isn't going to be through power grabs and those things. It's going to be right. through winning people to Christ, training them up as disciples, sending them out to change the world, and that's where the change is going to happen. And so you do enough of it in the negative world, it can become a positive world.
Sure.
Again. And so I think that the way I would phrase it, Luke, is, and I understand 100% where you're coming from, is that whatever season we're in, that obviously God is sovereign and he's going to use it to grow his church.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Because if you do read through the New Testament, generally, it's whenever things are hard that the church grows the most. The verse is escaping me. There's only one instance in the book of Acts to where it says that they were looked on favorably and the church continued to grow.
Mm, yeah.
It's only one time. Every other time it's, you know, they're trying to squeeze it out and it's growing and it's growing and it's growing. So, so it can be both, but yes. I think that there's great potential in any season that we're in.
Yeah. Well, one of the positives would be it actually making us think about the answer to this question. Why do you have hope? You know, mm-hmm. last week Peter had written chapter 4. We skipped ahead. He said, "Don't be surprised at the fiery trials."
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this week one of the key themes is like, well, don't be surprised if people look weirdly at you, like a sideways glance, like, mm-hmm. well, why are you a Christian? Like, mm-hmm. don't be surprised when they ask you. Which leads me to the question, how do we prepare ourselves to be ready to answer that question?
I mean, the answer to that question that we gave in the message, mm-hmm. if I remember right, or that we're going to give
right.
in the message, is that I am a Christian because I believe that Jesus died on the cross for my sins and he rose from the dead. Mm-hmm. That's what it all boils down to. That that is the reason why I have hope. That is the reason why I live the way that I live. And so, you know, you may have incredible questions that need some good explanation or some thought and those kind of things. But the bottom line, you know, is I'm a Christian because I believe Jesus died on the cross for my sins and then he rose from the dead. That's really where everything comes from. And knowing that and believing that is my answer, but it's also my hope.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's the hope that leads to what I would say is a joy-filled life. Like mm-hmm. there are tons of people who are trying culture's way and finding whether they're ready to admit it or not, finding that they're disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got just a few people in my life that I love dearly who kind of walked away from faith and have started to adapt to the culture, be discipled by all of that. And for like, they're the first to admit that there's like absolutely no joy in their life. And so there's this part of me, it's like, yes, it's the death and resurrection of Jesus, the confidence that we have in that leads to hope, and the hope leads to joy in any circumstance. And so whenever other people start to see the way that you're living, it's like, well, they're going to be curious about that, which is why we've got to be prepared to give that answer.
And I think, so this sort of bleeds, I'll skip ahead a little bit. The first point in the application was walk the walk, which is, I think, one of the ways they're going to ask you. So a lot of people might not ask you just straight up, why are you a Christian? But they might ask you, or, you know, just why are you such a hard worker? Why do you stay late? Or how in the world do you have a family like that? Like, how are you the dad and the husband that you are?
Yeah.
And so I think walking the walk opens some doors. And it also, I was struck by this line, Adam, you gave. Peter was not just speaking from his theology, but his experience. I love that line. So I think it's important for us not just to speak from theology, but to share our story. Kind of like I think it's John 9, right? I was blind, but now I see.
Yep.
Like, just tell your story. And have the elevator pitch 10 seconds, 30 seconds that you can share.
It's that. And then another component to it is, so my buddy Alan, and I can't remember who he grabbed this line from. I think it was Mark Buchanan, but I'm not 100% for sure, that one of the greatest dangers we can do is to traffic in unfelt truth.
Yeah.
And that part of our job, I think I'm using that word right. Part of our job, part of our responsibility as a follower of Christ is to be able to articulate mm-hmm. for ourselves why we believe what we believe and why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And to clearly be able to think through that. And that's part of learning to share your story mm-hmm. of, you know, and we love John 9. We love the blind man. I was blind, now I'm not. Hey, that's good enough for me. Or I love, Josh, I've heard the way you phrased it, you know, as a kid who grew up in church, and Luke, maybe you've used this too, mm-hmm. is like, I know who I would be without him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pretty.
It's scary.
And so, but it's learning, every one of us needs to be able to do that, to be able to articulate and be able to say, here's why I am a Christian. And that's why, even if it is as simple, I believe I'm a Christian because Jesus, I believe he died on the cross for my sin
mm-hmm.
and he rose from the dead. That sounds super, super simple and it sounds super elementary, but it is the fundamental
mm-hmm.
for why we are who we are. And so that changes everything. And so that's why I love my family the way I do. That's why I work as hard as I do. That's why whenever I lost my parent, you know, I grieved a little bit differently. That's why.
Yeah, I love those real life examples because those are going to be the questions.
Yeah,
what spurs the questions for people to ask?
Yeah.
So hey, quick commercial break for any other like resources if people are looking to go a little bit deeper. Like, why do I believe? So apologetics resources or why the Bible is reliable resources, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you tell people to go look?
Well, I know, and right now you just went through it with a group of 20 or so of our folks, 25 of our folks on Right Now Media. It's by Chad Ragsdale, and it's just called Apologetics.
Yep, I think it's the first one that comes up if you type in Apologetics on Right Now.
Yeah, so that's a great one if you want a video medium. If you're looking for a book, we've referenced it before, but The Reason for God is...
Those also have videos on Right Now, too, actually.
Do they? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's right, because that's where he sits down and talks with skeptics in it, so it's really
phenomenal.
Good.
From New York, yeah.
Another book, it's a little bit different, but Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis is really, really, really good.
One of my favorite reads of all time. Just, it was an enjoyable read. It was somewhat engaging, and it did a lot of this, was Letters from a Skeptic.
Is that Geisler?
It's Boyd.
Boyd.
It's his dad.
Yeah.
It's him and his dad, right?
It's him and his dad going back
Greg,
and forth.
Greg Boyd. Okay.
Yeah. So his dad is a skeptic, and they start writing back and forth letters. And the book is the letters that they wrote back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of cool to see as the son answers the questions of his dad and all that, and engages in the debate. It's kind of cool to see the skepticism begin to fade and waver and all that sort of stuff. But it's got a lot of really good content that's going to be helpful. But at the same time, it's kind of like a really engaging read because you're seeing the relationship between the two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And, as far as sermon series we've preached here, Doubtful with two L's, could be a good one, To My Friend Who Left the Faith could be a good one, there as well. And, those are just two off the top of my head.
Yeah. There was another one. What was the title of that? It was just a few years back, but it had some stuff, Why I Can Trust the Bible, The Great Known.
The Great Known. That's what it was.
Yeah. So you can search those.
That was in 2020. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we were basically wrestling through the question, we don't know anything in the world right now.
Right.
Because the world's spinning out of control, but what do we know? And so things like, why is the Bible trustworthy?
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. So those are a few... Hopefully, very helpful resources there. Still on Walk the Walk, that's the first application point. Brennan Manning, a Christian author, he has a famous quote. It says, the greatest single cause of atheism in the world today is Christians who acknowledge Jesus with their lips, walk out the door, and deny him by their lifestyle. That is what an unbelieving world simply finds unbelievable. So, did you all hear that quote on the DC Talk Jesus Freak album before?
Yes.
Yep. Absolutely, yes. I did. I listened to that every night in my third grade year. It was amazing.
What if I stumble? What if I fall?
DC Talk. You know who I've been listening to over the last couple of days? Talk.
Switchfoot.
Rich Mullins.
Ooh, Rich Mullins.
My buddy Nathan sent me a playlist because on the 29th was the day of his accident.
Okay.
So I've been listening to some Rich Mullins.
26 years ago.
Man. So, what are some of those areas?
Speaking of Rich Mullins, real quick aside, do you know one of my biggest regrets? So the summer after my senior year in high school, so I was still fairly new to this faith thing, really didn't have a lot of a clue of what was kind of going on. My church, we went to CIY. It was called CIY back then.
Yep. Oh, was he leading worship?
So that summer, he called CIY and said, I want to do a concert at every single summer conference that you have this year.
Wow.
And so we were at Gunnison, Colorado, and it was one of the nights, let's just call it Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, Rich Mullins is in concert tonight. And my youth minister, Jeff, was like, yeah, so if you guys want to come, you can. If not, you know, that's okay as well. And so I was like, I don't care who Rich Mullins is. I went and played cards in the dorm, and I missed that concert, and he died.
That was, one of the last.
He died just a handful of weeks after that CIY.
Wow. And I had, plane crash, right?
No, car wreck.
Car wreck.
Car wreck, okay.
Yeah.
Who was the plane crash?
It's Keith Green.
Keith Green, yes.
But so anyway, I missed one of the last concerts Rich Mullins did because I wanted to go play, you know, hearts or spades in the dorm room.
Yeah.
So I'm an idiot.
No, you're not.
Yeah. I am. It's okay.
You were just a high schooler.
I was a high schooler.
What are some of the most common areas, where Christians nowadays maybe need to watch out for when we're failing to walk the walk? What are some easy ones just to slip into? Like, we're not wanting to miss walking the walk, but what are some ones we should watch out for?
And I'll tell you one that's been bugging me lately. You guys ready?
I'm so excited.
So excited. Yeah. Is language.
Yeah.
So everybody knows, huge Patrick Mahomes fan. Huge Patrick Mahomes fan. Mm-hmm. Love my Kansas City Chiefs. Love Patrick Mahomes. He who just got $210 million guaranteed over the next
biggest contract
years.
Now, right?
Yeah.
And had to one-up. Had to one-up everybody.
Had to one-up everybody. But so watching the quarterback series on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Mahomes is a professing Christian and gotta believe, you know, that's true.
Genuine, yeah.
It's genuine in those things. I think his wife, Brittany, would be the same way. But watching the show, in fact, I had a conversation with my friend Alan about this. And, you know, he's got a mouth, especially on the field.
Yeah.
And so I was joking with Alan about it. So Patrick's middle name is LeVon.
Okay.
And so on the field, he's LeVon, and off the field, he's Patrick. And so it's like LeVon has a potty mouth, and I think Patrick, you know, maybe not, but it really bothers me.
Yeah.
And because I'm watching Kirk Cousins in that documentary, rocks.
Gee, golly.
Well, and that's really what he's saying on the sideline. He's like, golly, you know, gosh, you know, and those things. And, but language, I think that the crassness and the crudeness of language, we've gone from this, so positive world of Christianity where nobody ever talked like that, or if they did, it was really frowned upon, to where now, and Luke, this is.
Hey, you even see that on TV.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no F words on TV, no cuss words on TV, but now you see it all the time.
And so, and now, but for Christians, now what I see is it's like this, well, to show that I am with it, that I'm hip, just trying to reach people kind of thing, there's a crudeness to vocabulary that I don't feel like is appropriate. And I would just wonder, are we actually helping our witness in adopting the vulgarity of our culture's language, or are we harming it?
Mm-hmm.
There's one of mine.
And go read Ephesians chapter 5.
Well, that might be yeah,
a good one.
Too.
Well, what I've said before to like CLC students, because a lot of them would say they're Christians, but the interesting thing with CLC is, you know, you get some people that, they're in church every week, or other people that would say they're Christians but really don't have a church home at all, and don't really go. They would say, "Yeah, I'm a Christian, though." So sometimes we'll get, you know, back in the van, and they'll say, "Oh my God!" And I'll right after it say, "Is my Lord and Savior?"
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
something like that, and kind of make a joke about it, but then follow it up and say,
"Yeah,
we're going to respect God and His Word in this class. Mm-hmm. We're not going to use that kind of language." And I'll tell them, one of the biggest kind of pet peeves for me is, you're just not thinking about what's coming out of your mouth.
Correct.
And so whether you're using God's quote unquote name in vain, you got to think about what comes out of your mouth. And that is all sorts of things like tearing people down or sarcasm or inappropriate jokes, not just the cuss words or whatever. But I would agree with that.
And I would say this whole talk, like the whole conversation about what comes out of our mouths in regards to what you're talking about, Adam, with culture, I think is one of the many things that would just say, what do we need to really watch out for? And it's, are we being more discipled by culture than we are God's word?
Yeah.
You know, and I am not saying that watching Netflix or scrolling on TikTok are bad things, but I am saying they can be. And so we've got to be careful to make sure that what is really discipling and forming us is the truth of scripture and not the deceit of culture. And so, language would be one. And
well, I think another one is like, you know, having burner accounts on Instagram or Twitter so that you can have this one profile over here that's quoting scripture and
another one that's bashing other people.
And then another one that's bashing other people, you know, using vulgar language, you know, all these things. It's just like,
I think there's a word for that.
I think there is a word for
that. It rhymes with schmickoprit.
Yeah, something like that.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. But so I think that those are some things. I think, I don't know. In many ways, I look at stuff and it's like some of the things that we said were sinful 50 years ago, 45 years ago, that Christians should never participate in. And now there's been a little bit of a loosening on some of those things. I think it's been for,
in some ways,
positive. It's moved away from more of a legalistic mindset.
Right.
But it's like the baby got thrown out with the bathwater with everything.
The pendulum just keeps on swinging. And it's
and it'll probably swing back.
Yeah, and it's what Paul says in Romans about, should I keep on sinning so that grace could increase? There's almost like a license where, well, God is so gracious, like, of course he's going to forgive me. So,
right. I don't want to be legalistic.
Correct.
But,
yeah.
But I don't want to be unholy.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a balance to try and find there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, something I learned just last night, Tim and Mary Boland came and led our homemade class, that's homemade recipes for better relationships.
Shout out to the Boland.
It was just phenomenal. The Founders Hall was packed. We actually had to get more chairs from the family room, wheel them in. It was great. But he actually exposed some new research. This is not even from the Bible. It's from just psychology. And he said, do you guys like to vent? And people, you know, like,
yeah.
No one raised their hand. And he's like, I see what we're doing here. Like, nobody wants to say it, but everybody likes to vent. He says, there's new research on that. It says, he said, Google it for yourself. The negative psychology of venting.
Yeah.
And he said, even if it's like in your journal, and that's where he actually talked about the Psalms last night too. He said, you see the psalmist, they will say their like emotions, but it's not venting. And he said, there's negative psychology. Like psychologists are now saying, like, don't do this. Don't even do it in your journal. Don't write it on the paper. Like, because what you're doing is living out your worst story.
Yeah.
You're living it out. You're practicing it and rehearsing it.
And you're putting the person you're venting to in a tough situation as well. Because am I just going to have to, like, sit here and affirm what you're saying, even though it's negative and whatnot, just to be a
friend? Yeah, so that, just when you said burner accounts a while ago, it's like, that's actually just bad for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad for you. Yeah. So, anyway, we could talk all day on this, but we got to wrap things up fairly quickly. The other two kind of application points were anchor your confidence, and that was all about the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
Just so real quick, what are some practical ways we can just remind ourselves of the resurrection? How can we anchor our hope?
I think it's in your prayer life. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big one. It's just always make sure that there is some sort of gratitude that God has saved you from yourself, saved you from your sins. And that the reason that is possible is because Jesus Christ died on the cross and he rose from the dead. And so that's really what it is. It's talking to yourself, reminding yourself of that truth. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the guy's name right off the top of my head, but, you know, man needs to be reminded more than he needs to be instructed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so remind yourself continually of these things.
Yeah, I would throw in, make sure that community is a part of your rhythms. Anchor your confidence. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you're surrounding yourself with
the right people,
faith people, who, whenever you are lacking confidence, they're going to be able to step up for you, and vice versa.
Uh-huh. So that's a good word.
Get into some community.
Yeah, and you know, when we want to answer those questions, the Bible is true, God is good, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just go to Google for those answers, because you can find whatever you want on Google
or YouTube or TikTok.
Right. Go
the other big search engines
just
of the world.
Any medium. Go to community, because they're going to anchor you. The third one was prepare your answer. So Adam, give a little bit of just clarity there. Just what do we mean by prepare your answer?
Well, this is what we were talking about earlier, and it's just why you are a Christian.
Yeah.
And so even if it is, once again, as simple as, because I know I'm a sinner and Jesus died on the cross for my sins and he rose from the dead. And so that, what is your story? And why are you a Christian? That's really just what it comes down to. Spend some time articulating that for yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't have to be long either, right? Like 30 seconds or less.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how long does it take to say, I was dead in my sin, Jesus died on the cross for my sins, and then rose from the dead?
And if you're looking to fill in some blanks, just I was, fill in the blank, then God, fill in the blank, now I, fill in that blank. And it's really super simple. Luke, anything to add on that one? Prepare your answer.
Yeah, I think the word is in prepare. You know, it does require a little bit of reflection and thinking, and you know, you got to sit down with it and really figure out what is your story so that you're ready to say it.
Yeah. And I would add this, just one last thing. Think about your story, but also if we're trying to win a disciple and not an argument, we are really going to put ourselves in the other person's shoes and imagine what they need to hear as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're trying to communicate to a sports guy, you're going to use sports analogies. Mm-hmm. If you're going to communicate, you know, anyway, you guys get it. So bottom line, even in the face of hardship, we can hold on to hope. And I love that because the anchor, your confidence, it mm-hmm. was just very, the image of anchor and hold on was very good there. And then the challenge was, why do you have hope?
Yeah.
And I imagine that is just
articulate it.
Articulate it. Take some time, five yeah. minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes,
mm-hmm.
write it down,
mm-hmm.
figure it out. Anything to add there?
Nope.
Okay, cool. As I said earlier, Saturday is the autumnal equinox.
So wonderful.
We're officially in fall now. So I got some fall trivia for you guys. All right.
Eve? Yeah, she grabbed the apple or the fruit.
Yeah, the fall. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, there we go. All right. You guess like apple pie?
It's yeah. Okay. It depends.
Yep.
Depends.
How many apple pies could you make with one bushel of apples?
With one bushel of apples, you could make four apple pies.
I don't know how much a bushel is, so I'm going to say six.
21.
We're off.
We'll give Adam the point on that one. Yep. He's got
good.
The first one. What fall month will you see the full corn moon?
The full corn moon?
It's got to be October.
I don't even know what the corn moon is.
I didn't either.
It's got to be October.
I'm going to go November.
All right. Both of you are wrong. It's September.
What day?
I don't know.
It didn't say it?
It didn't say. U.S. State. This is the Northeast.
The corn moon sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah.
Revenge of the Corn
Wasn't
Moon.
Wasn't there Pocahontas, the blue
Never saw it.
Horned moon?
Yeah.
Not corn, but horned?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Never saw it.
Never saw it. Wow.
We could go through a list of those.
Which U.S. state named apple cider their official state drink?
You said
it's
Northeast.
In the Northeast, yeah.
That's going to
I'm
be...
I'm going to say Maine.
That's what I was actually... I was going to say Maine as well.
It's not Maine, so pick another one.
Massachusetts.
New Hampshire.
We're really good at this, lady.
Yep.
All right, so Adam only has... He's got the lead with 1 point. What bug flies south to Mexico during the winter months?
Mosquitoes.
No.
A beetle.
Butterflies? Do beetles fly?
Beetles?
They can.
Yeah, they can.
Blue beetle does. Butterflies. Where can you see the world's largest bat colony?
The largest bat colony. That's going to be in South America. I'm going to say Peru.
It's in America.
Carlsbad Caverns.
It's in North America. Luke, this is in your hometown. San Antonio, Texas.
The largest colony of bats is in San Antonio?
Bracken Cave.
Yeah, okay. I know Bracken Cave.
Have you been there?
Yeah. I didn't know that it was the largest colony of bats.
Okay.
Should have paid attention on the
tour. I have been to see that.
There you go.
Yeah, you're unlocking a core memory for me.
Pumpkin, is it a fruit or a vegetable?
It is a vegetable.
Fruit.
It's a fruit.
Ah, there we go.
What?
It's a fruit. All right.
Is it a fruit?
It grows in the ground.
And
well, I guess vegetables do too.
The seeds. No, seeds.
All right.
So, strawberry a fruit?
No. Their seeds are on the outside.
Right.
So it's a vegetable? Berry.
Or, I'm sorry, it's not a berry. It's not actually a berry or something like that. Weird.
I don't know.
If you throw a pumpkin in the water, does it sink or float?
It floats.
It floats.
You got that right. What country started the tradition of carving a pumpkin? It's not in the Western Hemisphere. Well, yes, it is.
Salem,
it is in the Western Hemisphere.
I don't
country?
Know.
A country. It's not the U.S.
Brazil.
It's
Europe.
It's Germany.
Ireland. Okay.
Germans.
Let's get some American history now. Kind of. Where was Christopher Columbus from?
Italy.
There you go. What year did he discover America?
1492.
There you go.
He sailed the ocean blue.
What
Ozark
Halloween
Christian College established in 1942?
What Halloween-themed town were the witchcraft trials in?
Salem.
Did you know that one?
I didn't know that.
Salem witch trials, yeah. All right, two more. Why is Thanksgiving on the fourth Thursday of November? Do you know this story, this origin story?
Not a clue. Something to do with the harvest, I'm sure.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
So it's actually President Roosevelt made it that because he wanted to extend the Christmas shopping holiday or the Christmas shopping season to pump up the economy after the Great Depression.
It's because of consumerism.
Yes, it is.
All right, wonderful. You know what? Let's boycott. Let's celebrate Thanksgiving on a different day this year.
All right. So the last one, retailers tried to rename Black Friday in the 1960s. What was the failed title they gave it?
I don't know.
Big Friday.
They Big tried Friday?
Big Friday. Friday, and it didn't work. Can you imagine why? Yeah, okay. Yeah,
Big Friday.
Big which Friday is, right after we eat Thanksgiving dinner.
Which is not even, it's not even Friday anymore. Black Friday is gone. It died.
It's like, the whole month of November, basically. Yeah. So, all right. That was a little bit of fun for fall. I'm glad fall is here. We're all glad fall is here. And we're glad you were with us.
Except for the fact that it could start so early.
Well.
Yeah. Other than that.
We can't have everything we want, I guess. But, hey, it's been a good discussion. Guys, thank you for being here. Thanks for listening with us. And we will be back next week to wrap up this series, First Peter 5. And then a brief commercial. We'll give it again, but our next series is going to be a giving series.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the change, right?
I think that's what we're calling it.
Keep the change, you filthy animal. Just kidding. That's Home Alone, you know?
Revenge and Christmas. Come on out.
All right. So it'll be a great series, though, talking about generosity and giving biblically, how we do that. So anyway, we've had a good time. We love you. We like you. And we can't wait to see you next time.